Do what? I'm not selling anymore. We're done. 11:30. I gave them a 5-minute warning already. I was in here and I gave them a 5-minute warning. Yeah. I know, but at some point, yeah. Good morning. My name is Tony, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, I'm Sherry, compulsive overeater.
And let's start with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Hello. Did everybody have a good time this weekend? This weekend could not have been a success without the incredible work of a great group of members, truly, who volunteered their time and effort for the last several months. Committee members, as we call your name, please stand and remain standing and hold your applause to the end.
Okay. Ancillary items, Liz R., are you in the room? Okay. PR and Cafe Press, Mary T., she might not be here right now. Literature is Victoria R., Art and Design, Gila. Saturday breakfast and speaker, Shoba. Lunch, Chrissy and Tony, not me, the other Tony, with an I. Important with an I. Dinner and dance, Helena and Andrea. Friday night entertainment, Paula. Marathon meetings, Caitlin. Meditation, Wendy and Deanna helped. Hoop fitness and Sunday breakfast, Patty O. Panels, Alma M. Prize drawing, Christian R. Registration, Haya B. and Lynn P. And special thanks, we want to also mention a shout-out to John K., who helped us on the website, and he's been being our little cheerleader there. So treasurer is Rod A., and our on-site cashier was Julie B. Volunteers is Liz R., and workshops was Laura J. So let's give everybody a big round of applause. And, you know, we do want to give a little bit of an extra thank you to someone who kind of rallied everybody for a few months before and really got this committee going and got the birthday party on the ground. So, Patty O., would you just stand up for a second and take a bow? There you go. So, great. Thank you, Patty.
And I'm Jessica, compulsive overeater and the chair of the LA Intergroup.
Hi,
I would just like to thank Tony here for stepping in at the last moment and seeing us through. And Miss Sherry B., who just like, I don't know, she manhandled this thing. So, thank you.
Okay, now we've all been thanked. We're probably embarrassed. Okay, so, let's see. I would like to introduce Mary to talk about the R2 convention that's coming up and do their little...
And now the convention's near, and it's time to go to Palm Springs. I'll have fun with all my friends and get the serenity that recovery brings. I use all of the tools and worked each step along the byway. But more, much more than this, I did it the OA way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, I bit off more food than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I prayed to God and spit it out. I faced it all, and I stood tall, and did it the OA way. Thank you. A little more. Yes, now the convention's near for Region 2, down in Palm Springs. It's at the end of June. In the year 2013, You know you'll have some fun with workshops and speakers that will inspire. But more, much more than this, please take a flyer.
Thank you to Alex. He's our Frank Sinatra. We're all going to go to Palm Springs and play like the Rat Pack did. And my name is Mary Monroe. I'm a compulsive overeater and vice chair of the convention. I just wanted to thank the birthday party for this wonderful event. We've had a lot of fun being here on the committee and invite all of you to come to Palm Springs. I wanted to read a little quote from Voices of Recovery. Situations I thought were impossible have miraculously worked out because I remembered to let go of my will and let God's will be done. And our theme for the Palm Springs Convention is to let go. So our programming is around the theme of letting go. Our workshops are letting go of ego, letting go of perfectionism, letting go of financial insecurity, extra weight, unhealthy foods. So that's the theme. We're going to have special focus meetings, OA How, over 50, anorexics and bulimics, gay and lesbian, writers, actors, and artists in OA, much more. And we're going to have a show on Friday night and Saturday night. We're going to have music and comedy on Friday. And Saturday night, we're going to have the Wizard of OA play. So we're going to have a lot of fun. We just want to invite you to come. We have flyers in the back by the door. Please take the flyers, as the song said. And mostly you have song sheets on your table, so we just want to say start spreading the news.
Start spreading the news. We're leaving today. We want to be a part of it. Palm Springs, Palm Springs, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. Palm Springs, Palm Springs, I wanna wake up in a city that's filled with OA. And find I'm with all my friends, sharing the recovery way. These compulsive eating blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old Palm Springs. If I can be abstinent there, I'll be abstinent anywhere, it's up to you. Palm Springs, Palm Springs.
Hi everybody, my name is Liz and I am a compulsive overeater and a marketing girl. And if you haven't heard from me this weekend, I've met a lot of really great people this weekend. If you haven't heard from me, I just wanted to remind people that all the stuff with this beautiful logo is available on our Cafe Press shop. There are cards outside the room. I have some here. There's everything from Apple iPhone covers to yoga mats. There's some beautiful tote bags. I see one right over there, and I knew she was going to model it for me. There's like 10 different kinds of bags. There's two sizes of mugs in case one is too small for you. There's water bottles, both in clear and white, a ton of different things. Different size shirts, different style shirts, and 20% of it goes to the inner group. So you're not only reminding yourself to change, you're also supporting the inner group. So if you have any questions, come see me after, or I can give you one of these cards, and I hope to see everyone next year at the 2014th birthday party.
Liz, PR girl. Okay, so it is now my pleasure to introduce our closing speaker, Nancy G., who will speak for 40 minutes. So, Nancy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Nancy, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And it's an honor to be able to speak here with a group of fellows. At first, I was feeling a little bit nervous because I'm like, oh, my God, I'm speaking at the birthday party. I better get my program together. And then I thought, because I'm a teacher and I do a lot of teacher training, I'm like, oh, it's just like teacher training. I'm just going to put on my alter ego. But I find that in a group like ours, I don't need to do that. I just get to be real, and I just get to share my experience, strength, and hope. So I'm super grateful to be here because I owe all the promises I have in my life today to my higher power and to all of you for trudging the road of happy destiny. I've been coming for, it'll be 12 years in March, and I'm maintaining a 30-pound weight loss. And I just do it one day at a time imperfectly. I wanted to share something with you that I read in the Big Book because I had the fortune of having a sponsor in my early years that was a Big Book thumper, and she always went back to the Big Book. You know, when I wanted to cry and pout and be like, oh, I can't, she'd say, we're undisciplined, we need to be disciplined, you know, and you just need to keep coming back. And she would just nix my whining and crying and be like, back to the solution. 1 minute on the problem, 2 minutes on the solution. So, you know, I just, one day at a time, I just kept practicing that over and over and over again. And that's why I'm still here today. And I don't have any, like, I'm not leaving because I still remember, even though sometimes I'll try to fudge here and there, like, I still remember how depressed I was, how lonely I was, how negative and morose I was. And today I have a life that is the absolute opposite, and I'm just not, you know, I'd rather be imperfect and trudge in program than to think like, oh, that's it. I've gotten all the promises. I'm out. Because even on a good day, the type of companionship and support I get in the rooms will never compare to my normie friends who don't understand what it's like to be looking at a, you know, a basket of chips. Like, they don't understand that. And I can't handle that without the support of program. That's just the way it is, and I don't argue with it. It's just the way it is. And also, I'm not perfect. And you know what? I don't have to be because, you know, I just go back to the Big Book. The Big Book says on page, I always look at the page because you might be curious about where I found this, on page 60, you know, after it describes the steps in chapter 5, it says, what an order. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. So for me, my story has been that I've just been willing to keep coming back. And especially in the early days, whenever I would blow it or I'd get upset or my food would get messy, instead of saying, well, that's it, I'm out, I would just think like, oh, what was going on? My sponsor would say, what was going on? And then I'd share with her, and then I would see, well, what can I change? What willingness do I have to just change a little bit? So say I blew it at dinner, and, you know, it was a basket of bread or whatever it was. Maybe the next time she'd say, okay, next time you're at a restaurant, let's think about that. Maybe you could ask the waiter not to bring the basket of bread. So by, like, chunking it, like, doing little actions, you know, over the course of 12 years, and just, you know, keep coming back, keep practicing, you know, I can sit at a table of, like, you know, bread. Or I'm a teacher. So everybody talks about, like, the goodies, and there's always food around me. I mean, I pass out chocolate and candy and cookies and, you know, I had a birthday party. The parents offer me cake. Like, that food is not for me. It doesn't even call to me. It's like in the Big Book where it says we recoil from it like an open flame. Like, it's, and that's the miracle of it. People give me gifts, and then I just pass them on. Or, like, it's not. Or people will say, I'm sorry, I'm going to have a brownie in front of you. But, like, I say, it doesn't, you know, you're not hurting me. You're not making it difficult for me. Besides, my sponsor said, too, it's not their responsibility. Like, it's my responsibility to take care of myself, to say no thank you, to bring my food, because as soon as I start blaming other people, well, then my recovery isn't my, I'm not being responsible for my recovery. And it's okay, she says, it's okay to take care of yourself. So these are all things that I learned in program. But one of the things that I needed to be willing to do from the get-go, step one, was I needed to change. So I love the theme of the birthday party, because in order for me to recover, I had to change who I was. And like I said, it wasn't perfect. It was just one little step at a time. And, you know, step one, I had to be willing to admit that I was not on a diet, that I had a disease, that I had a physical allergy, that that no matter how hard I tried to diet my way into recovery, that wasn't going to work, that there were certain foods. So it was like the first, that was my first aha. And the reason I came in the program was because I was 28. I spent my whole life trying to lose weight. When I was in my teens, I had bulimia and anorexia, and I was constantly exercising and doing a lot of these rituals where, like, I'm not going to eat all day today because I'm going to a party, or I'll start the diet on Monday, like constantly, like checks and balances, you know, binge and starve. And it didn't work, because by the time I was 28, I was exhausted. So, but I just kept thinking, oh, you know, maybe I just need more willpower. Or by that point, I started hearing a little bit more about, you know, eating disorders and how it was a psychological problem, but that didn't take care of it. You know, I got some self-knowledge about why, you know, girls like myself were bulimic. Oh, because they have a domineering parent, you know, blah, blah, blah. Didn't work for me to know that. And then it was about the emotional eating, like, oh, when I get scared, I want to eat. Okay, so I knew that, but that didn't work for me either. So it wasn't, and then I just gave up because none of that was working for me. And it wasn't until when I was 27, it was September, I'd given up. I said, okay, that's it. I'm in the fat, depressed group of people, in, you know, that are born into this world. There's the happy people, and they get everything, and I'm just the fat, ugly girl that gets nothing. Okay, I'll just resign myself to that. But I was crossing the street in San Francisco, and I was visiting my sister. In the middle of the street, there was this book, and I picked it up. I've never seen a book in the middle of the street. I'm telling you, it is a true story. I picked up the book, and my sister's like, oh, what is that? And I said, oh, I don't know, it's a book. Here, it's in the middle of the street. I better pick it up. And then I started reading it, and it's not program literature, but it was a story about a compulsive overeater that described compulsive overeating as a spiritual, you know, like, disease. And it just caught my attention because I think I was ready. I tried everything. I tried diets. I tried throwing up. I tried starving. I tried exercising, you know, and that none of that worked for me for very long. Maybe, like, I could do it for maybe a month, and then all the weight would come back, and it just, you know, I was exhausted. So I started reading the book, and that set me on the road to OA. So from that point on, I had to stop seeing it. It's like I was never going to be able to diet my way. I had to change the way I saw my eating. Like, oh, I had to be willing to accept I have a disease, and that when I'm overeating, controlling my food is not going to fix it. I can't fix it. So that was like step one for me. Like, oh, I can't eat sugar like a normal person. I'm an addict. As soon as I eat sugar, I want to eat more sugar. It doesn't matter if I say, well, I'll just have one piece of chocolate on Fridays. Like, it doesn't work for me. So I had to be willing to accept that and be willing to change and say, I'm not, with the power of this program, I'm going to, for one day at a time, not eat chocolate. And then I found that I could do that for a week. And then I had to move on to step two and be willing to change in the way I saw myself in the world. Because before program, I saw myself as overachieving, you know, whatever I said. I was very determined, you know. Whatever I decided I wanted, I would go and get. But I could never get the food thing. Like, I could graduate from college. I could, you know, set goals for myself, achieve them. But when it came to dieting, it never worked. Never, ever worked. And I would get really frustrated. It's like, well, why am I so successful with this part of my life, but I just can't? And I think, you know, God had to give me something to humble myself, to, like, right-size me, because, like, I was an egomaniac. And that was the other thing. I had to be willing to accept that I'm not in charge, that there's somebody else out there, some other being that knows more than I do. And, I mean, that was a shocker. Right, because I came from the "you have to know everything" club, and so I had to be willing to change those ideas. And then when I got to step three, I had to be willing to change how I ran my life. Like, it didn't, because I was a perfectionist. I thought, I'm just going to organize my life. I always had an agenda. I, you know, made plans in advance, you know, all that. And then my life wouldn't work out, and I would be nice to people, and then I would get mad at them because, you know, all the intentions were, if I was nice to you, then I could manipulate you into doing what, you know, I wanted you to do for me. And then, you know, I was such a good girl. Like, why aren't people being nice to me? And I, you know, have all these good intentions for eating right, but it's not working out. And then in step three, it was like, no, you have to change that too. Like, you are not in charge. God's in charge. And if you're willing to turn your will and your life over to God, then whatever that conception for me, you know, I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. When my disease took off, I decided to become atheist because I was so messed up and so hurt inside and depressed and morose and intellectual that, one, it wasn't cool for me to think that God existed because, you know, I was an academic, and if all my cool, smart friends found out that I believed in God, well, I was probably not going to be accepted. And two, I just didn't want to turn my will over. I wanted to control my life because I didn't trust anybody outside of my circle, outside of me. I didn't trust my parents. I didn't trust my friends. I didn't trust anybody. So for me to be willing to say, okay, I turn my will and my life over to the care of, you know, some God out there, I had to just do it a little bit at a time. Like I said, for me, it's been about baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. Like, maybe it came easier to me because I'm a teacher, and I know that when you teach kids how to read, you don't, like, go from, like, they can't read to the next day being able to read, you know, Shakespeare. You know, you have to give it to them in little pieces, and then they have to practice, and then they blow it, and then they, you know, like, two steps forward, three steps back, that it's a process. And that's what I tell my sponsees, too, with any of this, like, it is a process. You're going to do a little bit, and then you're going to mess up, and then you're going to do a little bit more, and then it just, you know, it's like the spiral. It just keeps getting better. So that one was hard for me. But then what were my options? Like, my option was I could keep running my whole life, be totally exhausted, because this was my pattern. Work really hard, get super exhausted trying to control everything, and then overeating. You know, whenever I feel overwhelmed or exhausted, that's when I want to overeat. And then when things don't go my way, I get even more angry because, you know, I put so much into, you know, work into it. I should have gotten it, or that should have been for me. And I had, you know, a sponsor tell me, you know, you take the action, you leave the results up to God. And what I found was that if I was just willing to let go and suspend all my judgments, because I had a lot of judgments, that if I waited long enough, because I'm a super, that's another character defect I have, I'm super impatient, that I would get better, in exchange. So, because I grew up in a very fear-based family, and if you made one wrong move, you were ruined for life. Like, that's, I was totally terrorized by that. I thought, if I make one false move, then I'm ruined for the rest of my life, and I'm just going to be miserable and in pain, and I'll never be able to recover from that decision. But she'd say, no, you just make choices, and then you learn from those, you know, the consequences of your choices. It's just a different set of, you know, consequences. So what I found that since I've come into program and I've been willing to take step three one day at a time, has been that none of the supposed tragedies have been tragedies. They've just been experiences that I may have preferred or not preferred. But then what's come along has been has improved my life. Like, if you would have told me today that, you know, I would be working at the school of my dreams, I would be owning my own home, I would have this fabulous boyfriend that loves me and is kind to me, that I have positive relationships with my parents, that I have more friends that I can count on one hand, I would have been like, you know, like, no way. By choosing to let go and let God, I wouldn't have believed it, because I thought you had to package yourself in one way, and a lot of my eating disorder was around packaging. Like, I have to be skinny and hot and smart, because then you'll like me, and then, you know, my life will take off. I've been like, no way. There's no way I'm turning my will, because I don't think God can run my life. But so I just kept taking step three over and over again. Of course, I would take my will back, and then something would happen, and then I would be willing to let it go. And like I said, my life has just gotten better every year, every year. And I'm super grateful. But part of it, you know, step four, another change had to be, I had to be willing to look at me, because when I came to these rooms, I thought I was perfect and I was nice, and I had like no idea that I had any part in it. It's like all these things, it's almost like I had to rewire the way I was wired. You know, like, okay, now I have to, now it's my fault. And every time I do a fourth step now, I get so annoyed, because it's like I'll do the writing and then I'll see my character defect and then I'll get mad at myself, because it's like, oh my God, I have another character defect. Because I think like, oh, I don't want to be imperfect. Like, I want to be perfect and I want people to think I'm perfect because I want to be right, because I have all this pride riding on it. Maybe because I grew up with a father who was a perfectionist and would ridicule you when you did something wrong. So I have, my ego has a lot, you know, has a big stake in being perfect and right all the time. And, you know, part of my recovery has been like learning like that's normal. Everybody has imperfections. It's just what you do with them. So slowly, 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 as my character defects come up, I've been willing to talk with my sponsor and say, oh, I'm really depressed. I'm dishonest and controlling and selfish, and I don't like that about myself. And be like, oh, but that's okay, because everybody's a little bit dishonest, selfish, and be willing to accept that and not take it as like I'm a bad person or I'm not worthy of love, or, you know, it's like, oh, like I said, there's all these ideas that I didn't know before I came to these rooms. I grew up in a home where you had to be perfect and you had to fake your way and lie, because if you were found out, then bad things were going to happen. But apparently, you know, everybody gets to be a little imperfect. I didn't know I had that option, that I could be imperfect. Like, what a concept, that I could make mistakes, that I could learn from my mistakes. I didn't learn that till I came into these rooms. And to be willing to operate like that, and like I said, more and more change. You know, step five, I had to admit, like I had to admit that I was imperfect. I'm like, no way, there's no way I can do that, because then people are not going to like me. And what I find now is even when I'm outside of the rooms and I'll be like at the lunch table and I'm sharing with my colleagues, like, oh, I got this wrong, people marvel at the space to be able to say, like, I'm not perfect, because we live in a world that's all about images and faking it, and it doesn't serve me. And more importantly, like, if I can't diagnose or I can't admit what the problem is, then I can't fix it. Like, unless I'm willing to say I'm dishonest, then I'm never going to deal with the dishonesty. Or unless I'm willing to talk about trail mix, you know, because that's my new food of choice, I can't deal with it, because it's still like under the covers, it's still hidden, and then I won't be able to deal. But something about admitting to another person, to your higher power, like, this is a problem for me, then we can begin to look at a solution. While I'm in denial, like I was in denial that I was a compulsive overeater, it didn't matter how much I dieted or controlled, I wasn't diagnosing the problem, which is like I have a disease and it's threefold: emotional, spiritual, and physical. I can't deal with it. But like, once again, change, change, change. And that's the hardest, because I'm a creature of habit. Like, I hold on to my character defects because I get something out, you know. Dishonesty, I get to like pretend and have people like me for certain reasons. Or fear, like that's another one of my character defects. I have the illusion that that's protecting me. Or selfishness, I have the illusion that I'm going to get what I want when I want it. And this last inventory that I did when I did a step six, and I had to look at those character defects, I was really, really sad, because I thought, what am I going to do when I have to give up fear and selfishness and dishonesty? Like, there's such an ingrained part of me that I actually kind of mourn them, because they've been my coping mechanism forever. It's like, you want me to be generous, but I come from a world where it's like, if you give, you're not going to get her. You want me to be honest? It's like, but what if you don't like what I say? Or, you know, and what I found that, you know, I kept so many people away from me. Like, the reason I couldn't have friends before wasn't because I didn't look pretty. It was because I didn't know how to have relationships with people. Like, I didn't know how to give. I didn't know how to consider the other person because of my character defect of selfishness. Like, I mean, I never thought, like, if somebody didn't want to hang out with me, I never thought, like, oh, they're tired or, you know, they have something important they have to take care of. I would think, oh, he hates me. What's wrong with him? Like, I have huge entitlements. Like, he should want to be with me. Okay, forget it. That's it. I'm never talking to him again. And then, I mean, that didn't really foster, you know, friendships or any, or, you know, dishonesty. If I'm not being honest with you, then what ended up happening was that I had to pretend to be somebody that I wasn't. And that act gets very, very hard over time. And then when the people would call you out, you know, they're like, well, I thought I was being friends with somebody else, but really, you're not the person I thought you were. So, you know, so it was a lot of that, my willingness to just patiently and with the trust of, you know, my sponsor and a higher power to be willing to let God remove those so that I could have the life and I could be authentic. Because now, you know, in the rooms, I feel like I can be authentic. I can tell you what I eat or what I don't eat or how I feel or how I'm scared. And because of my, you know, being authentic, I feel like it's just easy to be in the world. You know, I can come in and out without that constant exhaustion that would drive me to the food. Drive me to the food because I just couldn't, you know, keep it going. But like, once again, for me, it's like the change. It's the constant evolving, you know. And then, you know, as I moved through the steps, when I got to step 8 and 9, oh my God, to have to interact with people, like part of my story is I had a very adversarial relationship with my father. And I spent my whole life judging him because I was groomed to judge my father. And then to have to make amends to him and then change the way I interacted with him and say, oh, it's really not my role to police him and his behavior, you know. So I made amends to him, and then from there it's like I had to change the way I related to my parents and change the way I related to my brother. And the flip side of that was, I know you're not going to believe this, but once I stopped judging my brother and my father, they became much nicer people. You know, they did. They did. And they wanted to spend more time. So when different issues came up, like, for example, my brother, to make a long story short, my brother had this huge problem. And the first person he shared that problem with was me. Because he felt, and that's that I, because my sponsor would say, just take the action. Doesn't matter how he responds, because like I said, we kind of had an estranged friendship relationship. And I learned from programs, just from simple things like outreach calls. When he wasn't really talking to the family, I would just pick up the phone and I would call and say, hey, Hector, how's it going? What's going on? Oh, nothing. Most of the time he'd say, oh, everything's fine, nothing. Okay, bye. And I'd be like, okay. And then I would, you know, hang up the phone without the expectation that he wasn't going to turn into that brother that I had always wanted. But I would just take the action. I would just do what the big book says. I wouldn't do what I wanted to do, which was to scream at him and cry and say, why can't you be the brother I want you to be? I would just do what the big book would say and say, okay, pick up the phone, be of service. You know, people hurt you. It doesn't say cuss them out. It doesn't say, you know, stop talking to them. It doesn't say judge them. It doesn't say criticize them, condemn them. It says, you pray to God and you ask God, how can I be of service to this sick person? You know, thy will not mine be done. So I pick up the phone and that's what I would do. So when he had this huge problem, he thought that I would be a resource for him because I had been non-judgmental. I had been open and I had been willing to continue a relationship with him. And it's funny because his birthday was just last week and I was able to write him a letter, you know, a happy birthday card saying like, thank you for being so supportive. I was like, if that's not a miracle of the program, I don't know what is. And all I did was what the big book said. I didn't do what Nancy wanted to do. I did what the big book said. And the same thing with my father. He totally went ballistic on me over Christmas break. And instead of me judging him or telling him he was wrong, thank God for the, you know how it talks in the big book about restraining yourself, or in the, you know, A, 12 and 12, you restrain yourself. Because I was in recovery when he totally spun out of control and screamed at me like I was 16, I was able to look at him and say, that's your opinion. If that's not what you want, that's cool. Because I've learned in these rooms, like, not everybody has to love me or like me. I spent so many years being sad that my dad liked my sister more than he liked me. Once again, entitlement. I felt so entitled to have things be my way. That today I'm like, okay, well, if that's who his favorite is, that's who his favorite is. That's fine. I mean, everybody, maybe he's not my favorite parent. Maybe my mom is. You know what I mean? It's not a big deal. It's not a, you know, these things are not big deals anymore. I can just be like, okay, Dad, that's fine. If you don't agree with me, cool, I'll see you later. And yes, I was hurt. Yes, I was. But instead of, you know, fanning the flames of resentment, I could, you know, it says in the big book, you know, pray for him, pray for his joy, his happiness. He's a sick person. He has different views than I do. So yesterday when I saw him, I mean, that was a month ago, like there was some space around it and love around it, because I know his intention is loving. He just has a hard way of showing it, because he never got what he was. He's not in a 12-step program, and he never got the love that he deserved as a child. So, you know, instead of him being like, oh, I'm sorry, Nancy, I totally flipped out, or I know we disagree on this, but, you know, I still love you. He offered me like an avocado. He's like, oh, I brought you these avocados. And I knew that was him trying to, it was like a peace offering. So thank God that I have the 12 steps, because like I said, instead of doing it my way, which was to fight and scream and tell him he's wrong, I just did what the big book said, and, you know, we're able to move on, and I can, you know, deal with that situation in a loving way. And I can be here today and be happy and not be like resentful, because it says in the big book, if I let these resentments build up, I'm going to eat. And I don't want to go back to being that fat, depressed, lonely woman who was 27, resigned to just, you know, being totally self-absorbed. Because really, as the more I practice the steps, the more I'm learning that it's not about my little designs and plans. Like God, my higher power put me on this earth to be of maximum service to others. And if I'm fanning the flame of self-pity in my house, depressed, fat, ugly, then I don't have a chance to do my, you know, my purpose in life is to be of service. And whatever that may be being like nice to the, you know, cashier at Walmart or whatever. It might be simple. There was this man who came into the rooms at Foothill Inner Group, where that's my home inner group. Woo! And you know, he would come in and out of the rooms, and every Saturday morning I would go get coffee at this one restaurant, and I would see him, and he would say, we didn't talk or anything, like we would do the, you know how when you walk into a room and you see another compulsive overeater, like in a public setting, and I would just give him the eye, and he'd give me the eye, and then months later he finally came back to the rooms, and he said, thank you for being there, that just having your presence there reminded me of program. And, you know, I was in a really dark place, because, you know, this disease takes us to very dark, dark, dark places, like either insanity or death or taking your life. I mean, we see it over and over again. He's like, not that I was that special, but just, you know, you never know when you're going to be of service. So I know that if I'm at home and I let my, because my disease will come back. I know it'll come back, because it's always like hanging out in the back, because it still tries to convince me all the time, like, oh, don't you want to eat this? My sister and I were in Miami a few weeks back, and, you know, I would have my meals planned and, you know, and my snacks, and we'd be walking by this, like, restaurant where they sell buffalo wings. And I'd be like, oh, wouldn't these buffalo wings taste great? And my sister would, because she's a normal eater, she'd be like, but we just had lunch 10 minutes ago. You know? We just had lunch, or there was this place around the corner from where we were staying that had fries. She's like, oh, those fries would be great. She's like, because she always wonders, as a compulsive overeater, she's like, if you're going to binge, why don't you binge on, like, high-quality food? And I said, she's like, if you're going to go binge, go to some fancy schmancy restaurant. And, like, I said, because that's no fun. It just reminds me, like, the destructiveness of our disease is always, it's like, if I'm going to binge, I'm going to go to, like, Burger King and the donut shop and, like, Panda Express and get, like, really, like, you know, salty, carb-rich, like sugar. That's what I'm going to get. I'm not, because I want it fast. You know, I said, I don't want to go to a restaurant and sit there and wait for them to prepare this marvelous meal. It's like too much time. So So that's just, it's nice to have those people in your life because it's like a reality check. Like, oh, my mind is off. Like, you know, this disease will come back. Like I said, if I don't, when I'm being of maximum service to other people, I don't, unless they're upsetting me or, you know, I'm tired or one of those things, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. For the most part, I don't need to eat because what I'm really seeking is love, you know, attention. Because that's why I ate when I was a kid. I ate because my parents were too busy dealing with their own issues, and I never thought that I had the space to say, I'm lonely, I'm scared, I'm tired, you know, I need this. Instead, I would just, like, eat food. Or I have a problem, and my dad would say, oh, no, you can't have any problems. If you have problems, that's a bad sign. So don't have any problems. Like, so I would feel guilty if I had problems, so then I would just eat. But if I'm in the world of being a maximum service to people, feeling a part of, you know, sharing, like when I go to a meeting and I say I'm feeling scared, then the desire to eat compulsively, you know, is removed. And then now that, you know, like in step 11 where it talks a lot about establishing your relationship with God through prayer and meditation, that was the other thing. Since I was too busy trying to run the world and run my life, I mean, I was totally exhausted because part of that meant I had to be constantly guessing what you were thinking and what you were going to do and what all the different options would be of how you were going to treat me. Like if I, you know, all the time and think about all the different consequences if I decided this or that and then try to manipulate you so I could keep, you know, and it was just too overwhelming. That's why I was always exhausted. But if I take the time in the day, in the morning, like when I get up and I read my meditation books and I pray to my higher power and I'm reminded once again, like, because most of the time I would wake up and I would think about food, like, what am I going to eat? I mean, it still happens today where it's like I usually have oatmeal and a banana and my brain will be like, wouldn't it be exciting if you stopped at Burger King on the way to work and got one of those McMuffin sandwiches? I never eat those McMuffin sandwiches, but my mind will be thinking that, like, oh, that would be so. I mean, does anybody think about food as much as I do? I don't know. as a teacher, I'm like, you know, I work at this really awesome school, and it's like all the opportunities I ever wanted as a teacher are there for me, like dream school. I'm thinking, oh, my God, how do I have to be perfect? How do I have to be perfect? How do I have to plan out the rest of the school year? How am I going to get this kid to read? How am I going to do that? You know, and it's like that's my disease thinking. So, you know, that's how I operate in the world. So, you know, that's my setting. So then I have to, you know, open up my big book, open up my meditation books, and remember, like, I'm not running the show anymore. And when I don't run the show, it's easy. It's easy. I just wake up. I say my prayers. God, remind me to be of service today. If I start freaking out, please help me out here. Because I know you know. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know. And when that happens, and I know that that's all I have to do, my life is easy. You know, like yesterday I got to meet my boyfriend's family. When he met my family, it was a total disaster. Total disaster. But I didn't know it was happening. He's like, we're going to go over to my parents' house. And my sister's like, have you already decided what you're going to wear? You know, no. But because I'm in program, I decided, oh, this is just another group of people. You get to be of service to them. You get to listen to them and share with them, and that's all it is. And I didn't have to plan it in the future and think, what is this going to mean? How am I going to be perfect? Have I lost 10 pounds? You know, the whole story. So that's totally made my life that much easier because it's the same with the kids. I'd want the kids that I got in September to know how to read, like, the second day of school because, you know, and it's like, no, you have to just be willing to do a little bit every day, suit up and show up and be of service and, you know, pull my ego out of it. Because I have a huge ego, huge. Everything is riding on my ego about what are you going to think of me? How am I going to look? Are you going to like me? Am I going to be better than? And if I'm not better than I must be worse. But that way, if I pray in the morning and I just say, God, please just help me be of service today. If I don't know something, just tell me what the next indicated action is, and then I let it go, and I can go about my day, trying to figure out the rest of my life. It's too hard. And then the other thing too is meditation, being willing to shut up. Because I, like probably many of you, have a committee. It's nonstop. But if I take up meditation, and for me meditation varies. Like when I have more time, I do the set the timer for 20 minutes. I just breathe in and out. And it just, it's like Windex, like on a dirty glass. You know, it just takes, it just quiets my mind. And then I can get more of the intuitive thoughts and peace of mind. And like I said, once again, people are so much nicer to me when I meditate than when I don't. One, because I'm present. And two, because I'm just chill and calm. And that attracts people to you. Because people, like in the world, I mean, everybody wants some love and some peace and quiet. Because we live in a world that that's not the norm. And that when I'm doing all those things, then I don't have to eat compulsively. You know, and you know how it is when you're like, your mind is like, I need to eat, I need to eat, I need to eat. It's just like, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. I just wanted to read the 10-step promises, because I feel like the more I work this program, like I said, imperfectly, this is what's happened to me. Like, and we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food. Like I said, I can be around cakes, cookies, ice cream, and it does not call to me. My father can totally chew me out for some ridiculous reason. I could be like, okay. Like, you know? And the thing, too, is, like, I don't have to fight. I can just walk away. It's not my fight. For this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. That's the thing. I wasn't planning. You know how I'm a big planner. Like, when he says this, this is what I'm going to do. No, it just happened. And it, like, I was like, wow, you mean you don't have to do anything? I mean, that's a miracle. We will see that our new attitude has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We will feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So for me, that's why I need to stay. Because over and over and over again, it says in the big book. Like sometimes people are like, oh, I don't know how this program works. Or I say, oh, it's too hard. I don't get it. It's like, but if I go back to the big book, it always goes back to spiritual relationship with a higher power. Over and over. If I want to maintain my abstinence, yes, I need to stay away from those foods that trigger me. But ultimately, what I need to do is I need to strengthen my relationship with a higher power. Because that's what's going to save me in the end. And for me, that means coming to program, being of service, step 12. I mean, those are all things I didn't want to do. Like, when I think about my summer vacations these days, I'm thinking, what part of the world am I going to visit? Yes, I mean, I still do that, but part of it is, oh, wow, that's great. I can go to more meetings. You know, I can go to those Studio City 730 meetings that I enjoy because... you know, like I can, you know, last summer I went to Thailand. It was great. It was beautiful. But I never get the same peace and serenity and purpose in my life and joy as going to a meeting or helping a newcomer or being around all of you. It's like it's not as filling. It's not as filling. So I just encourage everybody to keep coming back. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to do it perfectly. It's just about being willing to just keep coming back one day at a time. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let's give Nancy another hand. You're great. Thank you so much. Now, you know, compulsory eaters are not always perfect, so me included. And I inadvertently missed one of our committee members, and I am so sorry. So Krista was our meet and greet chair, so just sponsor meet and greet, so she's great. So all of you that were in the sponsor meet and greet, so that was who was responsible. So thank you so much, and I'm so sorry. So are you ready for the prize drawing? Well, I didn't put any money in for tickets. So if you win, you could, you know, maybe give me the TV, or if you feel sorry for me, or no? All right. Well, all right. So we're moving on then. Christian, he's making his way up. So we've reduced the prizes to little tiny, they're in the bags now. So if you won the TV, it's now the size of the bag. So, all right. Yeah. That's what happens. All right. You ready?
All right.
So now this is your show. Go for it.
Little people, they're so cute. All righty, I'm Christian, a compulsive overeater, 100-pounder. Hey, just love it. I'm going to have the lovely Nancy, who just shared her experience, strength, and hope with us, choose the tickets for me, because I tend to not like putting my hand in when I'm the one who bought the stuff. So. No, I'm not the one. It's actually Tony bought. This is for the LG 1080p LCD TV that is sitting there, 32 inches of wonderful HD viewing, and it can happen on the wall in your bedroom or the wall in your house. Okay. And the winner of the TV is Faith. Where are you, Faith? Faith Noah Starkey. Okay, we'll call her. I'll accept it. She didn't send in a video, so I'll accept this award on her behalf, and I will have it installed before she has time to realize what's happened. All righty. I want this one. No, just kidding. So it's going to really be mixed up now. Nancy, please. Oh, I'm sorry. This is for the 9.7-inch Insignia Consumer Guide's recommended tablet, Android tablet,